You're listening to Devil We Know, a true crime podcast, which may contain adult themes, explicit language, and graphic depictions of violence. Portions of this show may be traumatic for those under 18. Listener discretion is advised.
Alaska, whose main shoreline extends well past that of all other states combined, is a state where old cultures have thrived for centuries. As the northernmost and widest and the largest state of the U.S., it had occurred a lot of history. People think of it as one of the last states to earn status as a habitable landmass, and many people even claim that the state was largely wild before a manifest destiny set in. What with the frozen land, untapped oil deposits, and completely natural state of the place, it's not hard to imagine why. But Westerners like to forget that there were homes there in Alaska long before the civilizations they brought with them. There were, in fact, indigenous people this far north and farther that had laid claim thousands of years before the U.S. had been dreamt up. One of these peoples is known as the Yupik. The Yupik, whose subsistence in 70 or so Alaskan communities largely consisted of fishing activities, have made homes all over the state, especially in western and southwestern Alaska. And the majority of these communities are relatively small. Many of these communities were also interrupted by colonial actions, such as the 19th century Russians, who built cities and forts in Alaska that made regular travel possible. One such fort, known as Redoubt St. Michael, stood in brazen vicinity of these communities, eventually spilling resources back over to smaller villages such as the predominantly Alaska Native fishing village known as Stebbins. Stebbins, Alaska, which boasted a population of 556 in 2010, resides in the Nome Census area of Alaska, and its entire police force, as of this year, have long, lengthy criminal records, only one officer of which had any actual police training. This town, residing in North St. Michael Island, became home to a woman by the name of Veronica Abouchuk. Always considered a kind and loving person by those who knew her, Veronica was a woman who, by the account of her niece Tatuk Muma, was full of life. In a state where Alaska natives' lives are consistently devalued by the law enforcement in times of trouble, Muma's auntie Veronica was still able to raise and rear four children, eventually moving from the island to live in Anchorage, where her niece lived. Once she had finished raising her children, though, Veronica was about a lifestyle change that few consider with purpose. She became homeless. It was something that she enjoyed and embraced, according to Muma. But it wasn't always safe, especially with the knowledge that indigenous women in the area often turn up missing or dead at the hands of malicious strangers. It was enough to unnerve any, and her family feared for her. In fact, many members of her family debated the fact that she even chose and enjoyed homelessness. To them, that was lunacy. It didn't help that Veronica had a sister who, in 2005, was found beaten within an inch of her life underneath a picnic table in Mountain View, Alaska. The sister, Martha Toms, died soon after in the hospital, and her murder to this day remains unsolved. Regardless, Veronica was her own woman, and life on the streets apparently wasn't all that bad. It wasn't something she resented, and she told Muma as much in their conversations. Still, it made one wonder, what could happen to a woman like Veronica? Sadly, that question wouldn't remain unanswered forever. Another person who made a move to Anchorage approximately 5 years ago was a South African named Brian Stephen Smith. Brian, whose life had mostly taken place on the Eastern Cape and in Queenstown, South Africa, has been noted by friends and by family as caring and meek. And in South Africa, he never racked up a criminal record of any kind. But there was at least some trouble brewing in the mind of Brian. As in recent months, he had nurtured a sudden and somewhat disturbing interest in apartheid, in the history of Africa, often delving into the Quora forum site, where he'd answer hundreds of questions related to South Africa. One of these questions posted had a pointed question about race, essentially asking if white people just naturally assume that black people are all criminal in nature. The response that Brian posted in August of this year reads as follows. White people don't assume it. Everyone assumes it when they look at the police crime statistics. Wherever black people go in the world, there is an immediate rise in crime. It is a statistical fact that blacks are, more or less, 600% more likely to violate the law. End quote. This racially charged comment, though, was from a Brian that the world never saw. Brian, to friends like Debbie Driesel, was an unflappable man that was not threatening or disturbing at all. In fact, many considered him a reliable companion. He had married his American wife, Stephanie Bisland, 5 years ago, and together the two made a life for themselves with their cat and pickup truck in Midtown Anchorage. Just 2 months before now, Brian had even become a naturalized citizen of the U.S., officially becoming an American to stay. But although he was a citizen now, Brian was not law-abiding. In fact, he wasted almost no time in beginning a criminal career, starting with a killing in the beginning of September. The victim was a 30-year-old Alaska Native woman by the name of Kathleen Henry. And it was during that month that Brian did the deed. This is known because during September, Brian reported vandalism to his truck. In addition to the fact that his wallet and other valuables had been stolen, among these, he claimed, were the memory cards used for cameras, a common thing for him to own, according to Stephanie.
When you're hit hard by the dark side of a story, you probably find yourself thirsty for more info. The same thing happens to people who hear about liquid death. What is it? Why the cool name? Can I drink it or will I die? All very good questions. Liquid Death is a new, infinitely recyclable packaging of refreshing mountain water to bring death to plastic. Sinister, I know, but totally metal. Pun intended. You can murder your thirst without murdering the planet. All by bringing some Liquid Death into your home. Now available at liquiddeath.com and all Whole Foods grocery stores. Want a badass koozie to go with your cans of Liquid Death? When you buy your first case of water on liquiddeath.com, you can get a free koozie 2-pack by just using the code DEVIL. Subtle, right?
Well, actually, subtle is when what you mean to say isn't readily apparent from what you're actually saying. So it's like,
shut up. I know what subtle means. Again, go to liquiddeath.com and use the promo code DEVIL. That's liquiddeath.com, promo code DEVIL, to receive your first case of Liquid Death to add a 2-pack of koozies for free.
The missing electronics, documents, and wallet led to another discovery in October, though. Police were handed a misplaced SD card found on the street that housed some very disturbing evidence of violent crimes against Kathleen. The card labeled Homicide at Midtown Marriott held 39 pictures and 12 videos, timestamped with dates between the 4th and 6th of September 2019. Some of the videos show the beaten woman crying, begging for her life inside the hotel room. Others depict a man choking her, hands covered in blood. When the man spoke in the video, saying that his hand was tired, he began to step on her neck instead, crushing it as he killed her slowly. The voice, police noted, sounded English, an accent which was relatively uncommon in the Anchorage area. Anchorage, which housed a diversity of nationalities, more commonly had citizens that spoke Russian, Yupik, or Hmong accents. So it took very little time to connect the crime to the 48-year-old from South Africa, with whom they were already familiar thanks to an ongoing investigation, one which was undisclosed at the time. Brian was subsequently arrested at the Ted Stevens Airport, and during questioning, Brian even admitted to being the man in the video. He told police that he dumped the body of Kathleen as well. The last few pictures of the memory card supported this, placing Kathleen in what looked like the bed of a pickup truck, much like the one owned by Brian. According to the New York Times, Brian's phone was even pinged to a location on Rainbow Valley Road along the Seward Highway, near where the remains were found on October 2nd at around 1:07 a.m. on September 6th. Afterward, at 1:24 a.m. the same morning, police found that Brian's phone finally pinged around Anchorage once more. With the murder of Kathleen solved, Brian was charged with first-degree murder. But there was more to the story. Veronica, who had been reported missing in July of 2018, also fell victim to Brian's violence. Her family had not seen her in over a year, and homeless life aside, that was very unlike her. In April of this year, Veronica's body had been found, but it wasn't until Brian was in custody that he admitted to taking her and shooting her in addition to his crimes against Kathleen. Although Veronica was found in April, she was still assumed missing because, until October 11th, she was still unidentified by the police. Her identity was confirmed shortly after Brian's confession, and once again he was charged with first-degree murder, with his crimes leaving another bloody streak of history in the already sometimes infamous town of Anchorage. Because this was not the first loss that Veronica's family experienced at the hands of a killer. There was a display of solidarity in the courtroom that day, but Brian's arraignment for Veronica's death, her family walked out when he entered, unwilling to be in the same room as the cold-blooded killer that took their beloved Auntie Veronica from the world so violently. Another display of solidarity came to the court in the face of Brian Steven Smith, too. Although Brian pled not guilty to the many charges he faced, his bail was increased to $2 million. And in the courtroom there sat people whose faces were streaked with blood-red handprints. These handprints, and the citizens sporting them, were meant to show support for the missing and murdered Indigenous woman movement. The movement, which pursues a heightened awareness and acknowledgement of the violent crimes committed regularly in the area against women of the Indigenous cultures. Additionally, this display and the movement behind it are meant as a reminder that the law enforcement of Alaska has yet to take the problem as seriously as the crimes clearly warrant. Whatever the case with law enforcement, many are of the opinion that catching Brian Steven Smith was more than a two-time victory. Many believe, as Muma does, that Brian's crimes did not begin nor end with the devastation and torture he brought to those two women. His predisposition to racist sentiments was proven in his online activity, and Muma believes it's only a matter of time before more crimes from this man are discovered and brought to the public's attention. Despite this, with a mandatory sentence of at least 99 years, Brian's incarceration leaves Anchorage in a little less darkness than what has been shrouding in it for the past 4 years. Perhaps with a bit more work and a lot more awareness, the darkness can be altogether lifted.